Hello and welcome to the Times Aerospace News podcast for the aerospace and defence industry across the Middle East and North Africa. I'm Alan Peaford. Well, it's been a strange week. The first ever Israeli airliner crossed Saudi Arabia on a planned visit to Abu Dhabi. IATA lays down the law about passengers putting the industry at risk by not wearing face coverings. We also get down to the numbers when we look at routes between the Middle East and Africa. And as aircraft are being brought out of lockdown, Chuck Grieve finds out it's not quite as simple as jump-starting the battery and opening up the doors. More on all of these after the news headlines, read to you by Marcella Nethersole at the Times Aerospace News Desk.
Hello, and here is this week's aerospace news from across the Middle East and Africa. Israeli national carrier El Al made an historic flight on August 31st by touching down in Abu Dhabi from Tel Aviv for what was described as peace talks between the two nations. This follows an accord signed between the two countries 2 weeks ago. This also marks Saudi Arabia opening its airspace to Israeli flights for the first time. IATA welcomed the historic flight, and this is what CEO Alexander Dejuniak said at Tuesday's briefing.
We always see a new route, new flights as a positive development, that's for sure. And it's not only an industry point of view, I think it's a more generally political approach or even ethic.
Dejuniak also called on governments to work together to find ways to re-establish global connectivity by reopening borders and to continue with relief measures to sustain airlines. Qatar Airways has reached a deal with Airbus to delay delivery of aircraft due to the pandemic-induced travel downturn. However, the carrier is still in talks with Boeing about deferrals and has so far not reached an agreement. Qatar Airways chief executive Akbar Al-Bakr, speaking at the CAPA conference this week, said, "As far as Boeing is concerned, we are still in negotiations with them, but regardless of what they feel, an aircraft manufacturer needs to oblige customers in difficult times, and people who will not oblige and stand with us in this difficult time will not see us again." South Africa's Comair, which operates low-cost airline Kalula and acts as a British Airways franchise, has received a binding offer from preferred investors this week, which is set to potentially put the airline back into the skies later this year. The South African airline went into voluntary business rescue in May after seeing revenues disappear, and its business plan had been due for publication on August 28th. The plan will go to a vote by the airline's creditors next month, which will decide the airline's fate. Ethiopian Airlines Group has successfully completed a new passenger terminal at its hub, Addis Ababa Bole International Airport, with emphasis on biosecurity and biosafety measures. It is the first airport terminal to be completed since COVID-19 struck. The Addis Airport is now the largest gateway into Africa, having overtaken Dubai last year. Ethiopian also confirmed that they remain interested in the Airbus A220 to support the airline's regional plans. They do have outstanding orders for the 737 MAX, but following last year's fatal crash, the airline is unwilling to commit to returning to the type anytime soon. Saudi Arabia's General Authority for Military Industries has signed an MOU with the Technical and Vocational Training Corporation. The MOU will support human capabilities in the military industries sector and to contribute to advancing the development of the sector. Egypt Air and Air Cairo have signed a codeshare agreement extending both airlines' networks to further destinations domestically and beyond Cairo Airport. It comes as part of Egypt Air's plan to achieve integration between the flight schedules of both airlines, offering more flying options for Air Cairo customers. Information and data specialist CH Aviation reported this week that Benin will be the African launch customer for the MA-600, the upgraded variant of the Chinese turboprop, the MA-60, which operates in a number of African countries. The -600 features Pratt & Whitney engines. Abderrahman Berthe, the Secretary General of the African Airlines Association, AFRA, has been recognised for his work with the African industry by the Greek Air Transport news publication. The ATN Individual Award was presented to Berthe in recognition of his efforts at the helm of AFRA, which culminated in it being ranked as a pioneer in the African aviation industry. And finally, if you've just got your head around the Industry 4.0 concept, think again. Rolls-Royce announced this week two breakthroughs in artificial intelligence ethics, which it said could help gain society's trust of the technology and accelerate the next generation of industrialization, which will be widely known as the Industry 5.0. The first breakthrough is an AI ethics framework, which is a method that any organisation can use to ensure the decisions it takes to use AI in critical and non-critical applications are ethical. Secondly, within that framework is the first step-by-step process for ensuring the outcomes of the AI algorithms can be trusted. Well, I'm afraid that's all a bit beyond me. I'm still in the Industry 2.0, so I'll leave you to explain more if that's needed, Alan.
Ah, Ella, I always had you down as some kind of artificial intelligence test dummy. Only joking. Actually, it is really fascinating to see how fast the digitalization of aerospace is moving. And these latest assertions from Rolls-Royce are interesting in that they're looking at an open book to develop shared agreement on an ethical introduction of the concept sooner rather than later. And meanwhile, there are plenty of other challenges about. I think we'd all like things to return to normal, or at least something we recognize as near normal, with the push of a button or the wave of a green flag. Sadly, it doesn't work like that. Getting aircraft that are currently parked back in service is going to be a long start and stop technical process, hampered by renewed travel restrictions and the implications for travel. But that doesn't stop airlines from planning for return to service. It just complicates it, as our MRO editor Chuck Grieve has been finding out.
We are now seeing Middle East and African carriers bringing their aircraft back into service, sometimes in different roles, flying cargo instead of passengers, for example. But just as parking them a few months ago wasn't as simple as closing the doors and shielding the engines, preparing them to fly again takes time and planning to make sure they're compliant. One company that's no stranger to managing aircraft return to service is Flyer Tech, part of Gamma Aviation, whose Middle East base is in Sharjah. They work with airlines globally to mitigate the risks around the various life cycle changes of aircraft. With the pandemic, the grounding of whole fleets has created unique challenges in MRO. Approved maintenance schedules, due lists, and validations have been thrown out of kilter. Skilled staff may have been furloughed. So what happens when the ARC, or Airworthiness Certificate, expires while the aircraft is in storage? Here's what Flyer Tech Managing Director Martin Bell had to say.
The ARC expiry isn't in itself a problem in the fact that if the aircraft isn't flying, you don't necessarily need your ARC. The flexibility, though, the authority that we've seen in the UK, for example, have offered is to allow aircraft overseas on the UK register to be actually physically reviewed by a maintenance organisation, somebody within the maintenance organisation that the, if you like, the camo has elected can be used. My only concern is if aircraft have been sat and typically staff furloughed, whether the expertise is there to, if you like, if there is a backlog of ARCs that need to be done, so somebody needs to bring those aircraft back online. And typically you don't have loads of ARC signatories necessarily sat around. You know, it's usually one or two, three people in the team maybe. So that's an area where there could be a backlog in work. From our side, we've got a team of people who are, and with the types we have under our approval, we've got a lot of experience to help people through this piece of work, even just to support with manpower whilst the airline starts to take shape again. And as I said, with ARC personnel, typically you don't have too many. And if you've got a number of ARCs that need to be done to get aircraft into service, we've got ARC staff that are trained to be able to help.
The one constant in the fog of uncertainty that surrounds the aviation world is the million-dollar question, when will things return to normal? Of course, nobody knows. All we have is educated guesses and the advice to plan for any and every eventuality, if you can. Here's Martin again.
There's a few things that I can think of. I mean, mainly this is all going to come down to planning. You've got the added complication of not just removing an aircraft from its storage or parking that could be at a remote airfield that obviously you've got to logistically get people to release those aircraft. But also there's now the social distancing measures to take into account and health and safety, you know, access. So I think, you know, I think what would typically be a storage removal process may need to be considered to be longer for some of those reasons, but also the aircraft don't like sitting around particularly, and inherently we will end up with a few defects because they've just been sat. So we've seen this in a number of aircraft with flight ferry flight type practice flights. Just to, you find a number of defects that are not normal, really. They come out of the woodwork. So again, it's about recognizing that the aircraft are likely to have some defects that it didn't have originally. I mean, I would suggest that if you're going to plan to bring an aircraft into service, I mean, there's some simple things around deferred defect review, looking at the maintenance program to make sure you bridge those aircraft back on to the program, because calendar items will still be ticking away. I mean, bringing my ARC signatory head in, I would be just going around checking all the emergency equipment to make sure it's in date and not being used, because it's the aircraft have been outside of a normal environment, especially if they're remotely parked. And then just checking the aircraft computer for any defects that are listed, those types of things. So you could almost, if you like, do a pre-plan engineering order to go and look at the aircraft, if you like, in a view of finding problems before you start to remove it. I mean, and just bearing in mind, if you have been in storage, some storage requirements are obviously engine ground runs, but also gear swings. So it just needs quite a bit of planning. And my only concern is if the airline staff have been furloughed, that planning may not start until those staff arrive. So that may actually have a knock-on effect to the aircraft entering into service.
Martin also has words of caution for airlines who've opted to use passenger aircraft to carry cargo by simply swapping packages for people.
The thing to bear in mind in all of this, I mean, is that obviously I've seen cargo carried in passenger seats. Passenger seats have a G loading, so they're designed to take a certain level of weight for impact reasons, obviously the G loading being part of the impact. So the other item that I would suggest is that obviously if you're going to put cargo in the passenger seats, you've got to be very careful, because a lot of passenger aircraft have IFE in the back of the seats or even on the seats. Obviously seat covers, etc., could be leather or any other material and could be ruined as a result. And clearly the weight, as I've already mentioned, for the seat, and also I would suggest it would need to be dry, lightweight cargo. You wouldn't want liquid being carried because of the damage. Obviously, if you've seen the pictures, you would have seen the 9G net, or the net over the top. And actually, again, putting that on the aircraft and removing it, you know, that there's potential damage to the actual interior of the aircraft. Not necessarily airworthiness, but obviously for customer, if you like, customer view of the aircraft, it's nice to have a good interior, and carrying those things may actually be at a cost.
Thanks, Chuck. Well, it's not just Gamma's Martin Bell that would like to see an end to the uncertainty. Ever since the international lockdown began, IATA, the Air Transport Association representing airlines around the world, has held regular briefings and updated global media on the latest developments and tried to weave a way through those uncertainties. Over the past 6 months, the association has called on governments, on industry, and the public at large to have faith in the airline and indeed the wider travel, tourism, and air freight sectors as being the key drivers for global economic recovery. Well, although 6 weeks ago there was optimism that the bottom of the curve had been reached and a climb out had begun, it now doesn't look so good. Governments, all acting independently, are introducing different rules and practices on opening borders, leading to that uncertainty, which ripples across the world and sees recovery stuttering and the hopeful growth signs dropping again. Only China seems to be seeing positive results, with the domestic industry almost back to normal. IATA's Director General and CEO, Alexander Dezhuniak, at this week's briefing, announced the three-point plan that he argues could help stem that descent into oblivion for much of our industry.
We are proposing a three-point plan to safely reopen borders. First, implement the ICAO takeoff guidelines universally. Second, build on the solid work of ICAO Council's Aviation Recovery Task Force, the CART, by developing an agreed common framework for states to use in coordinating the safe reopening of their borders to aviation. Three, develop COVID-19 testing measures that will enable the reopening of borders by reducing the risk of COVID-19 importation to what is acceptable to public health authorities with accuracy, speed, and scalability that also meet the exacting requirements for incorporation into the travel process. There is much at stake and no time to lose. The good news is that the speed, accuracy, and scalability of testing is rapidly improving. And we need to plan now so that we are ready to quickly take advantage of testing when it can be applied to facilitate travel. I will emphasize the need for leadership. The challenges of a global pandemic will not be solved by governments acting in isolation. The protocols are established for safe flight. Now, governments must take the next step with coordinated global leadership to manage the risks of opening borders. With testing, technology, science, and determination, borders can be reopened and the world can start moving again.
But with a number of Arab carriers announcing the relaunch of flights to African destinations, we asked IATA how the Middle East and Africa market was looking. Chief Economist Brian Pearce was first to respond, but then Sebastian Mikos, until recently the CEO of Kenya Airways, and now an IATA VP, added his view.
Yeah, Africa was sort of later on in the COVID trajectory as Latin America was. We've started to see some encouraging signs and some growth, some opening up of domestic markets and some international borders opening. But I think the airlines in that region are really challenged by the fact that there's been very limited government support. And, of course, commodity prices have collapsed, so that has further damaged the economy. So I think it's a really challenging region for both the traveller and for the airlines. But Sebastian, you've more experience of operating on the ground.
Yes, indeed, Africa generally as a continent has a big challenge in connectivity. So first thing I would like to note is that we see a recovery of traffic from Middle East to Africa. There are airlines who are successively opening countries. But it's worth recognizing that African state has made significant efforts to be flexible, to adapt to the ICAO recommendations. Among the first countries who fully adopted the CART recommendations, so the first CART, so this ICAO process was Rwanda. We saw Kenya opening widely the possibility of traveling. We see Ghana, who made a lot of efforts. So there is lots of sub-Saharan countries which has adopted very quickly courageous and flexible measures to be able to travel. Now, as Brian is saying, we have a situation in which the GDPs of those countries has probably tremendously suffered already from the lockdown. No export of any perishable goods and no tourism, which probably redirects the interest of the states from airlines to support other industries. So our worry in IATA is that as many airlines are supported in Africa as possible, because what we need to focus and advocate for is the inter-African connectivity, which is delivered by a few carriers, but we really need to have a close eye on Africa as a continent, because I also include in that our friends from Morocco to Tunisia, is that we really try to create intra-African connectivity and have airlines surviving, and we will all advocate to have any financial relief for them, so they are allowed to go beyond the COVID and still provide what is the the essence of their existence, which is connectivity.
Well, public confidence is vital to the recovery plans. Brian Pierce explained how, surprisingly, there have been signs that premium passengers are returning at the same rate as economy, suggesting that business travel may be moving earlier than thought. But confidence in the industry was hit badly last week when in Europe, a leisure flight from Greece to the UK, operated by Germany's TUI, led to a number of COVID cases being reported, while passengers moved around the cabin and failed to wear face coverings during the flight. While Dejuniak said he hoped this was a one-off, Sebastian Mikos warned passengers to remember the rules, or else.
Our position as IATA is very clear. When a passenger buys a ticket, he or she agrees to obey to the rules that the airline is introducing. That's part of the contract of travel. So from that perspective, if the crew asks to wear a mask, which, as Alexandre said, is very broadly followed, if somebody disobeys, for us it falls clearly under unruly passengers regulation. This is why we are advocating also to have the recognition of Montreal Convention worldwide, because we would like to provide a very safe environment for crew to work and to have very clear tools even to disembark the passengers in those cases who is not obeying the sanitary regulations imposed by the airline, which are imposed on us by sanitary authorities. So for us, if the crew asks you to wear a mask, that's the same like you don't smoke on board of a plane now, because that's a long-lasting agreement. And if you smoke, it's considered as unruly behavior. If the sanitary procedures are that you wear a mask, you simply wear a mask, and that's our airline responsibility to enforce it, because we have a broader safety responsibility. So it's a very unequivocal question.
Failure in public confidence really could damage the airline industry's recovery. So I think Sebastian is right. Airlines need to remind crews that this is as dangerous as smoking in the toilets, and there should be zero tolerance of such behaviour. Well, that's it from us for this week. Next week, we'll be looking at training plans for Saudi Arabia and also taking a look at something special in the pipeline for those interested in safety for aviation in Africa. Remember, you can keep up to date with the latest news on our websites, arabianaerospace.aero and africanaerospace.aero. So please join us again next week. And until then, keep safe, keep flying, and thank you for listening.